You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Joe Judge will join us in a moment. Let's listen to Mel Kiper, where he said on KJZ today that he graded the Giants' draft too harshly. Here's Mel.
I gave him a B+, and I'm gonna say right now, I was too tough a grader. It's 2:03 in the morning. I'm saying, give him a B+. I looked at that and said, I should get an F for giving them a B+. They deserve an A. Let's amend the Giants up to an A right now. Dave Gettleman did a great job. When you trade down twice and you get Kadarius Toney and then you get Aziz Ojulari and you get a number one pick next year added to what you already have in terms of draft capital and you do well with the rest of the picks, if that's not an A, I don't know what is. I made a big mistake giving him a B+. That should have been an A. Dave Gettleman, great job.
It's big of him to do that. I actually thought the Giants did well, Don. And what was your take?
Yeah, I did too. Again, I don't want to get into the knowing these players and all that. I think that's folly. I mean, we admit that we're not big college football fans. I just try to go for value. And what you try to do going into the draft is to get players that value. And everybody believes that, you know, the pick at 20 was a value pick, that this is a kid that can do a lot of different things. Now, could they have went for need? Hey, they know more about Parsons. They know more about pay. Those are areas that seem like I would go for from a need standpoint. But when you hear people evaluate where they got the players they got, they seem to get value. And for a guy that was 0-54 making trades, Michael, to make trades in back-to-back rounds, you know, shows that they were pretty aggressive. So I'm happy with the information that I have right now on it.
What were you about to say, Peter?
I at a certain point, I was like, what if he just keeps trading back? He may trade out of the draft.
Joe, I think he did a good job and also got a lot of draft capital for next year, which is
he did
draft and people are actually going to know about the players. Let's bring in the head coach of the Giants, Joe Judge, and he joins us here on the Michael K. Show. Coach, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How you doing today?
Good, guys. How you doing today?
Doing very, very well. From a distance, I like the draft. All the so-called experts like the draft. You've had a day to evaluate. How do you feel about your draft? Do you feel really good about it?
Yeah, well, please. I don't know if there's a team in the league that's not, you know, happy about their draft when they come out and everyone's had an opportunity to, you know, call a name of guys that evaluate and like. But look, we're very pleased with the guys that had the opportunity to put on a roster to come in and compete with our vets. You know, obviously no one's a finished product. So, you know, we'll kind of see how they compete and develop in time. But at this point right here, we're excited about getting here and start working in person.
Now, you draft a wide receiver at 20, Joe, so – you do seem to have a lot of different bodies at wide receiver. How challenging is it going to be to get them all involved if everybody's healthy and everybody's playing well?
Well, we've got enough imaginations in the office. We'll figure it out. The good thing is, you know, no one's really at the same skill set. So we've got a lot of, you know, bodies, but a lot of variety of bodies. And look, as they emerge through training camp and competition in terms of how they're making plays and what their strengths are within our system, you know, we just have to do a good job putting them in a position to make plays.
Now, Joe, obviously, you guys only care what the people in that room think, but then when you hear Urban Meyer of the Jacksonville Jaguars come out and say that, you know, my heart was broken when there was a player selected before us, and that player ended up being Toney, it found out later, does that make you guys feel good and even more confident about a guy that you obviously liked?
You know, it's funny. One of the things about the draft that kind of goes, you know, a little unnoticed, and you see it when you watch the TV copies and get the cameras in the draft rooms, that there's a lot of guys on phones texting throughout the draft. And a lot of that when guys are picking is, you know, once, you know, you see the name called and you actually get the name before it's announced on TV within the draft rooms. And, you know, after we, you know, pulled his tag, we had a lot of texts, you know, across the room. And I'm getting blown up by a lot of guys, you know, that I've worked with before, you know, in different programs now that they're all saying, like, hey, we love that guy. You know, that was our guy. We're waiting on him. We're hoping he slipped us, et cetera. So you get a lot of feedback right away. But, look, we knew this guy was, you know, not an under-the-radar guy at all. He's a guy that everyone knew about very well within the draft. He's got a, you know, dynamic skill set, and he's got a lot of developing to do, but, you know, he's got the right mentality and makeup to come and compete.
Have you talked to him yet, Coach? You guys have a one-on-one conversation?
Yeah, you know what? He was in here Saturday, so we were able to fly him in. He was actually on the West Coast. He took a red-eye over here to see us. We spent all day Saturday with him in terms of, you know, meeting. I did most of my meeting with him before we started the draft, you know, at noon Eastern time, and then he spent some time with the assistant coaches and was able to go out and kind of see a little bit of the city and meet a couple of our players in person. But, you know, look, the world's a lot smaller with these guys now through text and social media. A lot of our players have already established a lot of contact with them. You know, the second they found out he was a new teammate. But, yeah, he came on over here. It was a great opportunity to meet him. We sat down in my office for a while and just kind of chewed it up. And I went over a few of the expectations I have for him and all the players in our program just to make sure we're on the same page. But other than that, it was just good to see a smile on his face. And he was a guy that when we talked to him throughout the process, you know, the Senior Bowl, we interviewed him. You know, you do the Zoom interviews kind of throughout the process through, you know, March and April. And every interaction we had, it was just a lot of energy, a lot of positivity. He definitely comes across with a lot of passion that, you know, he really does love football. And the other thing I really like about this guy and I like about our players is he's his own man. You know, he's not afraid to tell you who he is. And, you know, he's not going to just go ahead and change for anyone. He's not a chameleon. He's trying to fit in. So I really like that about guys. You know?
Was there ever any thought, Coach, to take him with the 11th pick? And once you traded down and Dave traded down, was there a worry that he might not be there when you picked?
Well, there's definitely, you know, you talk about the scenarios if he may not be available at 20. And it's definitely something that comes up. And what you're doing throughout the draft is, you know, you've got your players, you know, evaluated and graded to a certain degree. And then as your pick comes up, you're never just talking about one guy. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a group of players. And you've got to anticipate that as your pick comes up, a lot of those players are going to get taken right in front of you, which it's funny how often that happens. You may be down to three players you really like, you know, and it's, you know, three selections until you're up, and one, two, three, they all go. So as each guy goes, you've got to bring another guy into the conversation in terms of, okay, who do we like now? Who's our next guy? What does he feel? You know, all that stuff there. But it's definitely someone we had, you know, a lot of love for in the room, in the building, a lot of respect for him, and he was very high on our board. We were very fortunate to get him where we got him.
Tell us about Ojulari.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, solid dude. Look, coached very well, coached very hard, a lot of respect for the Georgia program. Where he came from, he was very productive in a very familiar defensive scheme to what we play here. It's kind of a cousin defense, if you would, in terms of the tree it comes off of. You know, I love the way he plays against the run. You really watch him in certain games. When you watch him against Alabama, and they get those big guards pulling around, and he would just step across the line of scrimmage and just set the edge, and it wasn't where he absorbed the block and backed up a little bit. He was stopping it. I mean, he was just sticking his foot in the ground and saying, I ain't moving. And you know, that really impressed us. And then you watch him on the pass rush stuff. He has a skill set to develop. You know, really has a great finish and burst come off the top of his rush. And this guy plays with a lot of, you know, fundamentals and a lot of awareness, which is good. We got guys in the building who have experience with him going to high school. Kevin Shear, our linebackers coach, will be coaching him. Actually recruited and signed him at the University of Georgia. So, you know, Kevin had a lot of experience and already had a built-up relationship with him. So when we asked him about him as a person, you know, he couldn't say enough high things about him.
You know, one of the criticisms I've seen, Coach, is that the Giants really didn't address their offensive line, which struggled last year statistically. And you know, Dave Gettleman has said it's better than what you guys think it is. What's your take on it? Would you have liked to have added somebody on the offensive line?
Well, first of all, I'm excited to work with the guys we have on the team right now. And we're far from a finished product at any position. We're far from where we need to be as a coaching staff right now. We've got a lot of work to do across the board. Listen, there's plenty of offensive linemen that we evaluated and liked in this process, and we're looking to add just good players at all positions, but we're truly looking for the best player, all right, throughout the draft as they come up. Again, if you try to draft overly for need, a lot of times that's when you're really reaching and making mistakes. When you really evaluate guys and just like their skill set as a player, you like them as a person and how they fit in your culture and what they can develop into, that's when you end up hitting on players. We definitely talked about a lot of offensive linemen throughout the draft as our picks approached, but like I said earlier, there were some of the guys that, as they approached, were just taken off in front of us and got people to trade over you to go ahead and get them. So it's not that we didn't have love for offensive line. There's a lot of good ones in this draft, and there were definitely guys we had our eye on. But when we were picking, the best players available ended up being at different positions, and we're very happy with the guys we got.
Joe, I'm curious. I've always been very curious about this. I think the NFL draft is fascinating. There should be, you know, theoretical books written about it. But you're a big culture guy. You want to bring the right people into that room. Let's say that there's a guy that fits perfectly physically for what you need, but he's just not a culture guy. When do you say, you know what, forget about it, we got to have him physically?
Well, I would say this in terms of building our team and building the locker room. The things that I prioritize, first off, you start with the physical and the tape, because if the physical and the skill set isn't good enough, you know, look, we're not looking to build it with Eagle Scouts. There's a lot of good kids out there that can't play, you know, ball. I mean, look, my brother's a nice guy. He ain't getting paid to play. So, you know, we can't start with just the person. We got to start with the physical. But as you work through it, to me, what I prioritize is what kind of person are they? Do they love football? All right. Are they a hard worker? Are they driven? Are they process-oriented? And are they a good person? And, look, you can be a good person, have a different personality. So, to me, it's very important to really research and find out about the person. So on the surface, there's a lot of reports about different people that may, you know, look not favorable. And when you dig a little bit more on them and you spend some time with them, you can really get into them. And, look, some guys just need a little bit of help and development, you know, but they're good people. And you can put them in your room and you can tell that, you know, the guys are going to respond to them and that they're going to buy in because they're a team-first guy. And that's important to me, is really getting to know the person.
Because I remember something that Billy Martin, the former manager of the Yankees, said. He said, I'll take a really bad guy who's a great player as long as I could surround them with good people so that they don't go the way that would get them in trouble. Can you think like that at all?
I think when you bring bad people into your building, if you dance with the devil and you don't change the devil, the devil changes you. If someone's truly a bad person, selfish person, someone who's really puts themselves above the team, you're not changing that person. So it's important to really know the person. And look, you can take a guy who's made mistakes in the past. You can take some guys with some marks on, you know, marks in his history, but you got to dig down and really know the person to me. Okay. And genuinely, when you have good people, okay, when you have good people, you have a good locker room. All right. And that's when the culture, and look, that's more important than talent. A lot of times the culture of your locker room, you know, how you're going to fight through adversity. And look, our guys learned a lot about themselves last year. We didn't really start out on fire. Okay, it's no secret. But, you know, when you're 0-5, 1-7, your guys come to work every single day with a full head of steam and are practicing their butts off and supporting each other and trusting the process. That's when you really realize how important the culture truly is. You know, and those guys understand it as well.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You guys are high on Daniel Jones. We are as well. I really felt, Coach, we kind of got robbed from seeing the improvement when he got hurt. Do you feel that he was on the right path from, like, protecting the football and turning the corner just as he got hurt in that last month of the season?
You know, look, I'm very pleased in the progress Daniel made last year. I really am. And let's be honest about this guy. I mean, there's no excuses, but he didn't have a spring to work in a new system. He didn't have preseason games to get a feel for it and build chemistry with his teammates. We did the best we could in training camp. And ultimately, you know, it took a little bit more time to acclimate an entire team to a new offense and get going forward. But I'm very, very encouraged. I was very pleased. And but he's fun to work with on a daily basis. In terms of the injury, look, Daniel's the last guy that's going to use anything as an excuse. What I would say about the injury last year is, look, it was much more serious than maybe, you know, people thought on the outside. And I would say this, I'd say probably 90% of the players in the league who would have had that injury, including quarterbacks, would have been on IR for the remainder of the year. That's just the reality of it. It was much more severe than, you know, maybe he allowed people to know or the information that was put out there. And we're going to protect our players by not disclosing everything about their injuries, to be honest with you. But, you know, he fought through a lot of things. He earned a lot of people's respect through what it was. And, look, we played good teams down the stretch. They played better than us. That's all it was. There were a couple of games we couldn't play Daniel in due to his health. And I wanted to make sure we put our players out there and they always properly protect themselves and defend themselves. But look, I know Daniel's working hard every day. And he's getting his teammates together. This guy's done a lot of things from a great, you know, very high leadership already throughout this offseason, getting the team together, working. you know, making some strides. So, look, I'm just telling you, he's fun to work with. He's a guy that you have a lot of confidence in just because of how the way you see him work on a daily basis. And that's really what, you know, wins the team over. At the end of the day, it's not about, you know, me or any other coach trying to build him up. It's about the 10 other guys in the huddle looking when he calls a play, looking at him, having confidence he can get it done. And that's one thing that we have, you know, absolute certainty of with him.
And I'm going to say something now, Coach, that you will not care one bit about. But I thought, and okay. You, the guys heard me sing the prayer, I thought you were phenomenal last year. I thought you did an unbelievable job, and you had that team playing hard, and they were focused the entire year. But more importantly, how do you think that you did? I mean, how do you feel about the job you did? Was the being an NFL head coach everything you thought it was going to be? Was it harder? Was it easier? What's your evaluation of yourself?
Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I think there's one team every year that's successful. There's 31 teams that fail. That's just the reality of it. So in terms of my own performance, I mean, I'm accountable for the results of the team. That's what it is. So obviously there's a lot of things I have to be better. I'd say in my first year as a head coach, there's a lot of things you learn in terms of, you know, time management, in terms of, you know, how to really help the team. There's a lot of things you learn on reading your team and making sure you adjust practices and game plans accordingly. You know, I think the biggest thing is the unknowns. You ask as many questions leading into it in terms of, you know, what's going to happen year one. You talk to guys who, you know, had just gone through their first year. I called Flo a lot last year, Brian Flores. And we talked, you know, throughout the whole process of, okay, what were some things that came up for you first year? And what he said to me was just very, very true. He just said, look, there's going to be things come up that there's no way you can prepare a plan for. You just got to trust your gut and go with it. And he was absolutely right. And, you know, one thing Bill told me before I left New England is he said, look, you're going to going to work every day and have a checklist of, you know, 25 things you got to get done. And you're going to leave work after being there for 15 hours and you haven't even gotten a number two because of all the things that come up. So to me, it's about really just making sure that, you know, you delegate the right way. That's something that was probably hard for me early on because I want to have my hand in everything. Not to be a micromanager, but just to make sure that, you know, I'm being very thorough and detailed and involved with everything. And, you know, you trust people that are in your program. That's important. And, you know, delegating the right way and making sure you have things organized the right way allows you to be more efficient with your time and kind of get down that checklist and make sure you're keeping the team moving the right way.
What was there one definitive hardest moment of the year for you, or there was something in particular that navigating it was pretty tough?
You know, I think the thing that stands out about last year, probably the thing that stands out to everyone about last year, is obviously just dealing with the newness, the pandemic stuff. It was a constant reminder. I mean, look, No one wasn't sick of hearing put your mask on. No one wasn't sick of hearing space out. No one wasn't tired of hearing, you know, we've got to be careful when we leave this building. You know, these are the protocols. We can't have people over for Thanksgiving. We can't go out to the mall. There's a thousand things that, you know, you had to constantly keep reminding your team. And it's while you want to focus on football all the time and keep the team focused on that, you had to build in time every day and dedicate it to keeping the guys reminded about, you know, hey, look, we can't afford to put ourselves at risk. It's, you know, not only you getting sick, it's the close contacts that are going to be wiped out as well. And that was coaches, that was players, that was staff members all across the building. So, you know, on a daily basis of having to do, you know, health reports, you know, not just injury reports and talking to strength coaches, but meeting with the doctors and trainers in terms of the COVID reports and the testing and where you're at. And it's one of those deals where, you know, your phone starts ringing every night. It was normally about 10 o'clock at night if we had a close contact or a positive test. Phone rings at, you know, 10 o'clock at night. It's probably about roughly the equivalent of, you know, well, my kids are teenagers and all of a sudden, you know, I get a knock on the door at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. That's probably not going to be good news. But that was probably the, you know, most unique thing about last year that we had to navigate.
I'm curious, Joe, like from a fan standpoint and a media standpoint, after that win against Seattle, it felt like, whoa, this team's on its way. So there was a genuine disappointment that things went the way it did in the last month of the season. How did you manage the expectations of that win? Backup quarterback, go to Seattle, beat a good team. Like, what was your reality at that game? Or did you were there concerns that still there was a lot of work to be done and were they not quite as high as maybe everybody outside felt they were?
I think you always just got to keep things in perspective and just have the same process, you know. You know, look, we had a lot of games we came in where we knew as a team we didn't, you know, hit the mark to be successful that day. We had games that we came in and everyone was very happy that the, you know, week of work we put together paid off and we had a victory. At the same time, you got to just remind everyone all the time, you know, it's never as good as you think. It's never as bad as you think. We just got to go back to work. and come in on Monday, clean up the game, come back in on Wednesday and start the next opponent. So to me, I always just try to keep things in perspective. You're supposed to be happy when you have success. There's a lot of work goes into it. It's a joint team effort. You're supposed to hurt when you lose. You work very hard. You don't, work to have that kind of result. But you can't ride that emotional roller coaster either. You got to make sure you kind of keep everybody even keel, and make sure they just stay focused on the process and not the results.
All right, final thing, Joe. After they jumped you in the draft and then they bagged a game that could have gotten you to playoffs, could little Joe Judge have ever imagined how the Eagles would do him so wrong?
Little Joe Judge. I mean, honestly, guy, like, the last thing I'm thinking about in the draft is what some other team is doing. I mean, we had a plan. We knew that there was a chance someone was going to jump us. We had a list of players at that point. I love the way it worked out personally. It was great. We got great value going forward next year. That's something you can't, you can't place enough value on. Get another first-round pick, get another fourth-round pick, get a fifth-round pick this year that allows us to get A-Rod when we move back up. That was huge for us right there. We got a player we're all really, really excited about coaching. It's the kind of guy we want to add right into our program. So, look, teams make good business moves. That's what it is. And that was a good business move, and I thought we made a good business move as well. As a result, look, they were already on the calls talking about trades as they were anyway. So if we get enough value, it's worth it to move on down. That was something we were willing to entertain. So regardless of who was taken in front of us, I think there are a lot of assumptions we were absolutely going to do, which, again, is the funny thing. There's a lot of conversations leading up to the draft, a lot of conversations in this draft room. I would say nothing's absolute until it happens. So in terms of someone assuming who we would have taken, probably going to trade it back. I mean, look, I think the trade worked out, and, best thing that possibly have happened for us.
There's no way you've
got a lot of value in the picks.
There's no way you're forgetting how they bagged that last game, though. You'd have been in the playoffs. There's no way you're forgetting that. Maybe the draft, I understand what you're saying, but I don't even forget what they did.
Look, we got to play better and not put our destiny in anyone's hands. So that's all irrelevant. I mean, we can't focus on what any other team does. That's irrelevant to us. We have to play better for, this year the 17 games were allotted. I got to do a better job coaching, and we got to make sure we execute and get the opportunity to.
Joe, thanks so much. Congratulations. Looked like a good draft from afar, so I hope it works out.
Thanks, Joe.
Hey, guys. Appreciate your time today.
You got it. Thank you. We appreciate it. 1-800-919-3776. We'll take some phone calls. We have ENN coming up as well. It's Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.